what, Streetlight Headquarters down in San Diego. Hi, Shawnee.
Hi, Robert.
How you doing? You guys have been what out there for what is it now? Two months? More than 2 months. What's been happening? I hear you not only went to City Hall and camped out there with 70 to 100 people, then to Horton Plaza with 150 to 200 people, and then six of you got arrested at the Nimitz Naval Center, or what is it called?
It's the Naval Training Center, basically the Camp Nimitz.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, let's see, where should I start? Basically what happened is, after we had a press conference on May 4th, down in front of City Hall with Congressman Bob Filner, I decided to do some research on something that he kept telling me about, which was the McKinney Act.
That's the federal law passed in 1987 that establishes priority for homeless use of federal property, right?
Right. Actually, it was in 1988, and then it was changed again in 1994.
Uh-huh.
Because Mayor Golding and her crew did not like how it was worded, because they did not like that they would have to have it go for the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So, after getting the old copy and the new copy, I brought it to the attention of many other people, many other activists, mm-hmm. including Anna Forrest, too, and we started planning a takeover because it did belong to the homeless.
Now, what exactly were you considering taking over, or did you try to take over?
We were going to try to originally take over the ship.
So this was actually a big boat.
Right, that was on cemented into the ground, but the gate was locked.
Now, this boat, was it vacant?
Yes.
And how many people would it have sheltered or accommodated?
Temporarily, to get attention, it would have done at least 50, 60 people.
Okay, so what happened then?
Because the gates were locked, we did our protest signs right out there on North Harbor Drive. And after a while, we started chatting around to see how we can get in to get a building, which would have been better.
Uh-huh.
And that was very difficult because they had security like you wouldn't believe, watching our every move.
Now, it should be pointed out to anyone listening that you're in considerable pain as you're talking to me, right? You have a dislocated shoulder or a...
A torn rotator cuff.
Shoulder. Did that happen in the course of this action?
No.
Oh, good.
I wish.
Right.
But, so finally about 11 o'clock Saturday night, which was then the 16th, three of us went scouting out how to get in the NTC.
NTC, the Naval Training Center?
The Naval Training Center, which is myself and two other gentlemen.
And that was a, Naval Training Center, was the boat or was a building?
We were going to try to get in the building, but we had to get onto the property first.
I see.
I was the lookout, though, because my shoulder, they got on, they couldn't get too close to a building. So, they finally come back after about 20 minutes or so. We go back to the group with another alternative. After I tried to pick a lock, it almost got caught. And I'm picking it with a little knife, which I almost had until security came by. So we go back to the group and we tell them, well, here's this alternative. And everyone was in agreement with it. So we loaded everything up in Forrest Carroll's car, except for some stuff my husband, Richie Mee, carried. And some other people carried, and we started walking. Except four gentlemen got in the car and started driving. Once we get up to where we can start to walk in through one of the gates, I started to get ahead of everybody, and a security guard is coming straight for me in a vehicle, and they kind of did kind of like a quick turn to try to block me, and I kind of went right around them, and I kept walking. And while I had them occupied at the second main gate, everyone else was coming right behind me.
How many were you?
10 at first.
Uh-huh.
There were 10. But four did not get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, there was Ian Henry, Ronald Anderson, which is my uncle, myself, and Forrest Hero, and Amisha Perrin that were actually arrested.
Mm-hmm. And what were you all arrested for?
Trespassing.
And how long after you arrived were you arrested?
Within minutes.
And what was your objective in going on to this property? Were you actually seriously suggesting it be opened up for homeless use?
Yes.
And are you still suggesting that?
Yes.
And
because of what we did late Saturday, early Sunday morning, they had an emergency meeting Monday in the evening from city council and several police officers. And they're now considering to open up the NTC for the homeless in the first place because they realize they messed up.
Really? So they're beginning to feel legally liable because of your action and because of the McKinney Act?
Right.
Now, I also understand, that just skipping to another subject briefly, that the city bureaucrats and politicians were considering some kind of action to evict everybody from the city hall area?
That was at one point. When Roger Scott, another activist, and I went down to talk to a Sergeant Boyd Long with the San Diego Police Department, because Boyd Long wanted to see a copy of the current McKinney Act that I have, we asked him about that. He says, no, right now for the next 2 weeks, that's been put on hold.
Okay, so there is no attempt to... Are you still protesting in front of City Hall every night?
We're still protesting down at City Hall.
And how many were there last night?
Do you want to know how many were there the last night? 125.
And how are people doing? Is there a sort of a determination to continue, or
people are going to keep on going.
Okay, and...
not going to stop until we have something for the homeless.
How do you guys eat there? Do you get your own food, or how do you...
Don't go to the food line, spend a lot of food. Food Not Bombs brings in a lot of food.
Uh-huh. So we're Food Not Bombs...
And a lot of the churches are not starting to pay attention and fill in.
How about the media? Are you getting much attention in the last week?
We had quite a bit of media on Sunday, on the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still paying attention to us because of the fact of what Channel 739 here in San Diego called, those six that were arrested, the Nimitz Six.
Aha, so you are one of the infamous Nimitz Six, eh?
I have two other family members that are part of it, and of course, two are part of it. And it's just, we're going to hold on to that title for a little while.
Uh-huh. You know, you've also been working with the California Homeless Civil Rights Action Network. That's me and some other folks who've been trying to help put out these alerts to get...
Right.
Pressure on City Hall from other cities in the state to kind of encourage them to pay attention to your legitimate concerns.
Right.
And I guess the original reason you started this protest had to do with the fact that, there are less than half of San Diego's homeless people have any shelter at night, right?
Right. There's over 7,000 right now in San Diego that have no shelter. But here's the thing. When we had the meeting with Bob Filner down right in front of City Hall, and we invited the city council and the mayor, they wouldn't come.
Mm-hmm.
It was stated by Bob Filner himself to me that the city of San Diego is the only city in the state of California that has not applied for federal funding for the homeless.
So this is actually the key point. Do you want them to apply for federal funding, or... are you looking further than that for them to guarantee shelter?
We're looking for both.
And Bob Filner, of course, is a congressperson. Has he taken any action recently to support you after this meeting a week and a half ago with him?
He told me off record and all that he was going to have an investigation done because, you know, this is getting ridiculous and what's going on. Every bit of money they get from every other group, every other organization, goes to St. Vincent de Paul, which is Father Joe Carroll, Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, Vietnam Veterans, and all these groups don't do anything.
Well, don't they provide shelter? Don't they provide some kind of shelter? I mean, about 2,000 people receive
Catholic
shelter.
Catholic Charities does not accept for pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
And after you have your baby, Salvation Army only has enough room for so many people. St. Vincent's has room for so many people. But with St. Vincent's, we've had problems to where they're abusing the homeless.
In what way?
Physically. There's people that have a lawsuit going against St. Vincent's for the abuse.
Maybe you should go demonstrate in front of St. Vincent's as well, huh?
That's one possibility we might be looking at.
You might get some more support. Other people might come out and join you.
Well, right now, if we even go on there, several of us, because of a February 14th problem, they will have us arrested again.
Well, so stay on the sidewalk. Put up big signs.
We were on sidewalk one in the incident occurred with Forest Hill. I was witness to that one.
Right. Well, you have a right to be on public sidewalks. And
we know. And it's just, they think they control everything. But not all the money that Father Joe Girl gets goes for the homeless.
So you're concerned about mismanagement in the so-called poverty pimp industry?
Yeah.
You're concerned about the failure of the city to apply for federal funding for homeless assistance, which other cities in California have done?
Mm-hmm.
You're concerned with violations of the law around the McKinney Act?
Which is a federal law.
Which is a federal law which requires, and actually active sabotaging of the McKinney Act by Mayor, what's his name? What's her name?
Susan Golding.
Susan Golding, who apparently is deliberately trying to, well, in 1994, lobbied for changes in the act so that they could keep a military base vacant rather than put homeless people in it.
Actually, what they were going to do so they couldn't put homeless people in it, build hotels, golf courses, expand the airport.
I see, which they didn't do.
So far, not yet. And we're going to keep it to where they can't because that does not belong to the city. In that manner.
Sports stadiums are not enough, huh?
No. With her, she wants to be everywhere else but where it really is needed. And technically, on the stadium that's going to be going up downtown here, the base Padres Stadium, parts of that's going to be belong to the homeless, just like the Qualcomm Stadium. Parts of that is belong to the homeless because they use parts of the homeless money.
Well, the homeless
they have money there for the homeless, but they're not using it or sitting on it.
And you've been listening to Shawnee Mead of Streetlight, a newspaper run by, for, and of the homeless in San Diego, talking about the demonstration she was a part of and which she was arrested in this last Saturday. I'm going to read briefly a newspaper story from a San Diego publication. Battle to house homeless in NTC barracks rages on, Ronald W. Powell. More than a year after its closure, the Naval Training Center remains a battleground for the forces that want to house the homeless. Again, this is in San Diego. On Saturday, six homeless advocates were arrested for trespassing on the training center grounds in a protest they hoped would end in the use of now shuttered barracks as year-round shelters. The training center closed in March 1997 after nearly 75 years of service. A coalition of homeless assistance agencies is still waiting to receive $7.5 million under an agreement reached with the city of San Diego more than a year ago to pay for 150 units of transitional housing for street people. The coalition agreed to the payment in exchange for giving up any claim to the training center property, which was available for homeless assistance purposes under the Federal Base Closure Community Redevelopment and Homeless Assistance Act of 1994. While the protesters remain dissatisfied, homeless assistance coalition leaders are confident that the money and the housing will come. Sister Raymonda Duval, chairwoman of the Homeless Shelter Providers Coalition, said City Councilman Byron Ware, who brokered the deal, is dedicated to making good on the agreement. Apparently, however, the protesters don't think so, and that's why they're there, because the city has been sitting on its hands for the last 2 months as people have been sleeping in the rain in front of City Hall. That pretty much speaks for itself. And that's sort of the story from San Diego down there. Here in Santa Cruz, we have, of course, been talking a lot about the FCC and its arrival on the scene here at the...
Right now?
No, not yet, but
sooner
or later. Actually, it was on Saturday the FCC came by, and they were... interested in inspecting the station. Well, I think they were interested in destroying the station, frankly, David, because what we heard from Skidmark Bob, actually what we're about to hear, you heard a brief interview about problems on the street in downtown Pacific Avenue, police misconduct and so forth. Now you're going to hear about FCC misconduct and the threat facing small micro-powered stations like the one we are at here at 96.3 FM. By the way, if you're getting bored with anything we're talking about, do give us a call at 423-5361, and we'll put you on the air and put you on the hot seat.
And I'll get to do the public service announcements about the sleeping ban.
Why don't you do those public service announcements now, David?
Okay. Yeah. Hey, folks. This is the last days of the drive of the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban the legal way. So this would be the best way. We have support of 85% of the city if we can get this on the ballot. So all of you out there with any petitions at all, get some signatures, send them in. 144 Belmont Street is my house. You can walk it right to my door, put it on the front porch, knock on my door. Need to have those petitions turned in. Dan Cooper, sorry I missed you today. Let's talk later this evening and find out how much your troops brought in. University Creek and Lisa, I hope you guys are going to be there Saturday when Dan Hamburg, our Green gubernatorial candidate, will be speaking, and he will be referring to the sleeping ban. We'll have a sleeping ban table up there as well as a green table, and Dan Hamburg will be speaking also at 9 o'clock at night to save the beach flats. So that's kind of a combination green sleeping ban announcement.
At Palookaville.
Palookaville, yes.
23rd at 9 o'clock.
Saturday.
$14.
Yeah, if you got it. Or you could come man the green table or the sleeping van table. We might be able to get you in on a bargain on that. We do need people to man those tables. I will be busy chauffeuring our candidate around. But really, seriously, folks, we can get this on the ballot. It's happened before. You know, city initiatives do sometimes qualify. We're really, really, really scared and really, really low in terms of the number of petitions turned in. We have lots of petitions out there, lots of groups that haven't reported yet, and you need to do that now. You can watch me on Tuesday on Club Cruise making the same announcement, and that will be the deadline. We do need to be able to have these things in order and at least go over them briefly before turning them into. If we do not have enough signatures, I'm not sure that we'll be even turning them in. We need to be able to modify and do this campaign over again, not give up. Whereas if we turn them in, I believe the legal limitation on us will like cut us off for a whole year to be able to make the same drive. So if we don't have enough signatures, we're not going to turn them in. So that's a lot of waste of a lot of people's work. And if you're sitting out there on some petition with three signatures on it, hey, that's maybe, you know, there's a few of you out there, 10 of you, 100 of you. There's plenty of you. I mean, God, there's what, at least 160 of you that have more than six petitions. Turn those petitions in. There's some of you have 50 and 60. Sorry, well, here's the FCC now.
Come in,
doctor. Oh, hi, it's not. Well, okay. The federal, whatever. Who is this? Who is this man? Anyway.
Citizens of the United States.
Well, okay, it's about time the citizens of the United States took over. How about practicing some democracy in America? And if you guys want to practice democracy, initiative drive is one of the ways to do it. The city council doesn't seem to be able to move on this issue, so we're going to have to do it ourselves. So you guys have the petitions. Turn them in. If you don't have the petitions, 429-5284 is my home number for short memory. Do not remember that number for a long time. But for this week, you can get those petitions delivered to you, or you can come by and pick them up somewhere. Also, you could probably call up Becky's number, 429-8529. Becky, I told your number on the line because this is our push. This is the last week, and we need people to pick up petitions if you're not gathering signatures already.
And there you have it, David Silva.
David, never give up, Silva, yeah.
That's right.
Hi, David, how you doing?
Down and dirty David. Actually, entering the studio, for those of you who are a bit alarmed about the FCC prospects, it was none other than our next talk show host, Uncle Dennis, who is going to be probably
interviewing.
He'll be interviewing Scott Kennedy for 2 minutes when Scott comes in between 8:02 and 8:04. Perhaps not. Who knows? In any case, again, I would like to apologize to all you listeners who got our press release. We were informed by Scott Kennedy. We had his promise. He was going to be here. But perhaps, like so many other promises by our city council, we are, of course, disappointed in the reality. The reality seems to be considerably different than the initial promise that has been put out. So I can only say that...
Poor Robert. Well, that's not fair.
I'm getting patted on the shoulder here.
getting patted on the shoulder by...
Maybe we should give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he had an accident
close colleague
on the way over here.
Yeah, Scott Kennedy was probably hit by a flying developer on the way over here. It's quite possible. You never can tell what's happened to poor Scott.
From the latest DiCenzo cartoon, he's grasping to the side of...
clasp to the bosom of Mike Rotkin, yes.
It's a tragic figure.
You know, it's interesting. These politicians, really, it's time to sweep these guys out. I mean, haven't we had enough of these types? Let's get rid of these guys, please. The sooner the better. Somebody start a recall movement sometime, or I just, I'm going to go
you
to
just
bed.
You started it, Robert.
Well, I hope so.
All we have to do is finish it.
Yeah, the sooner the better. Let's get that one rolling. In the meantime, get those sleeping band petitions in and give a call. If you've had any questions about anything that's happened on this throughout this show, you can call 423-HUFF and give your own comments after the show. If I can keep these characters outside, you can please talk outside. Thank you very much. I have a little back talk here in the studio. We will be returning to... the music will be coming, yes. Actually, we're going to play our next little skit is going to be from the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, compliments of musician Carol Denny. She's also a comedienne from Berkeley, a writer, a political activist. You've heard her describe Berkeley in the past, and she's a fighter for the rights of poor people in Berkeley. We're going to kind of give you a little bit of Bob Duran talking about the FCC's closure of different places in San Jose, different radio stations, and then we're going to turn to a skit on the FCC, and then we're out of here. So I want to thank you, those of you who did call in, those of you who have stayed tuned in, and invite you to come back again on Sunday at 11 o'clock when we will probably, we'll attempt to kidnap Scott Kennedy and bring him in here, or possibly play some old Scott Kennedy tapes for those of you who are nostalgic for dear Scott. Frankly, I may have heard just about enough about this particular individual at this time. I know I should be more graceful under pressure. Perhaps I will be next show. Let's turn now to Skidmark Bob Duran talking about FCC closures of free radio stations within the last week in the San Jose, Los Gatos, Hayward area. Skidmark, you've been actually busy interviewing two radio station people. Actually, you learned that two radio stations have been shut down, one in San Jose. It's two micro-broadcasting stations last Saturday. One in Hayward.
Hayward. Uh-huh. Hayward area, which is where the FCC's office is, so it's not very far away from.
And one of these is called, I guess, the Phantom, you say, was shut down on Saturday, although he didn't surrender his transmitter.
He did surrender his transmitter. He invited them in, but, you know, they threatened their way in.
Are we talking about the Phantom, or are we talking about Pirate Cat?
Phantom. Actually, both of them did that, but the mm-hmm. Phantom happened probably before they came over to our station, because it was very same day, May 16th, and they came by their station and threatened their way in, you know, threatened with fines and imprisonment, and you'll be in prison with, you know, with a bunch of guys, you know, and this and that, and unfortunately he gave up his transmitter. That's all they took was a transmitter. They didn't take any music or anything else. Of course, he didn't have a search warrant either, so they just took it, and they said, you know, they warned him sternly that if you do this again, you'll go to prison.
We're talking about the Tuesday bust against Radio Cat or whatever it was, Pirate Cat.
Both of them pretty much went about the same way, except the one Pirate Cat or whatever it is, I think it's 93.7 or something like that. It's only one person doing it, and he's a minor, and he
built his own transmitter.
He built his own transmitter, and he put it on the air, and he didn't have a collective of people surrounding him, support. He didn't have, you know, numbers. All he had was himself and him being a minor, and, you know, his mother supports him all the way, but, you know.
What about the Phantom? Did he have a collective over in Hayward?
I don't know anything about him. I'm going to have to give him a call, find out what's going on, but, yeah.
Hopefully on Friday on your show, which is?
Friday at 9 o'clock
in the evening. That's, of course, Skidmark Bob's scurrilous stuff, as nobody calls it except me. So tune in on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3.
here in the Twin Towers of the Oakland Superior Court Building on Friday, January 20th, 1995, where the Federal Communications Commission is seeking an injunction against Free Radio Berkeley to stop its micropower broadcasts. Let's listen in.
Be seated and come to order. The court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Claudia Wilkin presiding.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor.
We're here on the matter of the United States versus Stephen Denifer. I've familiarized myself
with... I think that I can quite save us a lot of time, Your Honor. I must say you're looking quite fetching in that black gown. I can save us a lot of time by simply pointing out that I represent the FCC, and when the FCC wants an injunction, why, the FCC gets an injunction.
Is that right?
That's right, Your Honor. And my, doesn't that hairdo suit you perfectly? Yes, Your Honor. Since way before you were born and when you were just a tiny little baby, we've been popping injunctions out of the court like a Coke machine.
I see.
Your Honor. So there's really no need to waste the court's time with this. I mean, it's such a lovely day, and I'm sure there must be some shopping you'd rather be doing or getting your nails done. Not that your nails aren't lovely. Of course, I didn't mean to imply that your nails aren't lovely. Just the way.
Your Honor, with all due respect to the FCC's historical record, there's a constitutional issue here which deserves the court's attention.
Yes, I quite agree.
No. Wait. Really, there's no need to waste a lot of time on all that First Amendment stuff because, you see, whenever the FCC asks for an injunction, the FCC quite simply gets an injunction. Oh, must, no fuss. It's all quite simple. You see, Your Honor, you're just much too young to realize that it's really just a formality that we're actually standing here at all. You're simply supposed to enjoin Mr. Denifer's broadcast, and, well, that's all there is to it. It's really simple, really. And then you can run off and buy some pretty new shoes.
Mr. Silverman, how would you respond to the question of free speech?
Why, Your Honor, this has nothing to do with free speech. These broadcasts are nothing but irreparable harm. And every time Mr. Denifer gets on the air, he just commits more and more irreparable harm. We've been recording his broadcasts for almost a year, and believe me, Your Honor, this is not free speech. No, not at all. This is flagrant disrespect for the government, Your Honor. It constitutes irreparable harm each and every time he goes on the air.
Mr. Hyken?
Your Honor, the FCC has criminalized all broadcasts of less than 100 watts, and we feel this discriminates against low-income people who wish only to use the new technology to communicate without interfering with commercial broadcasts. It doesn't make sense to require hundreds of thousands
Your Honor,
of dollars
Your
in
Honor,
licensing.
Don't pay any attention to this joker from the National Lawyers Guild, Your Honor. They're all just a bunch of bleeding heart McGovernicks, right? Anyway, I'm sure you know the type, Your Honor. No, really, it's almost like lunchtime. Why don't we just expedite
this? Mr. Silverman, my initial inclination is to rule against you.
No, you don't understand, Judge Wilkham. Hey, look. You must be just too young to recognize the respect to the FCC.
Mr. Silverman,
you probably weren't properly apprised of the customary judicial deference due to the FCC.
Mr. Silverman, I'm going to deny the injunction.
No, you don't realize, Your Honor, you're opening such a can of worms here. You can't do this to the FCC. We're always getting our injunctions.
But I think I can, Mr. Silverman. Your commission seems to have left a lot of matters unattended to.
But
injunction
Your Honor,
denied.
Your Honor, there'll be chaos and disorder on the airwaves. There'll be irreparable harm all over the place. These people aren't even carrying O.J. Simpson coverage.
Thank you for your attention on this matter, Your Honor.
Good day, gentlemen.
All rise. This court is now adjourned.
Oh, gosh. What am I going to tell the boys back in Washington?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and my name is Uncle Dennis. I want to thank Robert for that fine piece of docudrama. I believe that's what it is, isn't it, Robert? Docudrama? Yeah, anyway. And at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, it's time for Earth First Radio. But instead of the Daryl Cherney rendition of Earth First, we're going to head right off into the 1997 benefit for Judy Berry, the second part's being broadcast tonight.
Be there, stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 for 2.5 hours of bathrobe spears broadsides, the reports on new assaults on cannabis patients, the upcoming city council meeting on Tuesday, and a whole essentially important announcement from the trust in tenants' rights in Santa Cruz. Actually, a long interview on a number of subjects with them. Civil rights for the poor here in Santa Cruz with Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, I think it's called. I'm your host. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you for the next 2.5 hours.
Rosenberg's
For Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is your twice-weekly dose of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor, here in Santa Cruz and around the state. As I was mumbling before the theme song, We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, we have numerous reports coming in. Particularly interesting is a long interview with Marco of Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, in which he talks about a number of upcoming and ongoing situations around tenants' rights with a lot of specifics, and that really is the heart of the situation for me, learning how tenants are being treated by landlords, even how small businesses who are tenants are being treated by landlords. So hopefully Marco should be in to talk about that subject sometime in the next half hour. We have lots of things happening. There was a benefit for the Beach Flats last night. There was a big brouhaha in the newspapers in the last couple of days about Karen Gillette's, what a surprise, she's back again as head of the Homeless Community Resource Center. She has rescinded her resignation under condition that she be given absolute control, I should say her board be given veto power over board members of the other board, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, that was going to merge with her board, that she doesn't like, which of course means the end of any criticism of Karen Gillette and at the board level. So it wasn't enough that Gillette got an offer to take the executive directorship even without any kind of open interviews of other people. No, rather she had to determine that no one on the board could criticize her and live. Well, kind of typical of Karen, given the way she's run the homeless services, the free meal, and the Homeless Community Resource Center for the last 7 or 8 years. And incidentally, I'm not suggesting Karen Gillette shouldn't have been a director of this. I just find these tactics of resigning and pressuring and then drawing in Scott Kennedy, who, by the way, that's the reason Kennedy was not on my last show. He was scheduled to debate here with Keith Sugar on issues of the Beach Flats and other matters concerning the failure of not progressive politics, but politicians who use the label progressive, like Kennedy and Rotkin and Matthews. He wasn't at our show because he said he canceled for the third time because he had to go to the Homeless Community Resource Center and essentially, I want to say he bullied the board into accepting all of Karen Gillette's demands. I wasn't at the board meeting. In fact, nobody was invited to the board meeting outside the board. That's one of the problems that we've had with the Homeless Community Resource Center's board meetings. They've all been closed. So the homeless client wants to get in there. He has to go past Karen Gillette and get her personal approval before he or she can get into that meeting. That's how it's been for the last 2 or 3 years. It officially became that way
when she pressured her board to make that a rule in the spring of 1997, when I, simply as a matter of form, because I'm not really interested in her board meetings, but felt they should be open on principle, tried to get into the board meeting, tried to find out even when they were, tried to get a copy of the agenda. None of that stuff was forthcoming. Her compliant board, which essentially is a bunch of merchants, Donna Murillo, Linda Steinau, it's a downtown business association stacked board. Don Lane, former mayor, or Gon Lame, as I call him, who heads the ice cream shop downtown, and who once was a kind of a hope for homeless people. He's also one of the yes people on her board. He was the so-called negotiator who was trying to negotiate with me. And I said, you know, I'd be happy to talk to you, but it seems the issue is really clear. Open up your board meetings. And Karen Gillette and Don Lane and their board's response was, we're closing the board meetings. Now, when they had negotiations with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, one of the deals was they would have to open their board meetings. But if they can cut down and stack the boards, any such agreement could be eliminated once the new board meets, so it would be kind of a meaningless thing. Not that you're going to get too far even with open board meetings, but it seems kind of a primary democratic necessity to have that, particularly if you're claiming to serve homeless people without any homeless members on your board. Karen Gillette hasn't had a homeless member on her board for years. I think she called in that old war horse from Wisconsin, Brian Koepke, who suddenly showed up in town. He was the only homeless board member for the first couple years of the board. He was a homeless activist who was active with all of us in creating the services that Karen now reigns over, but he kind of became a part of her machine eventually and hasn't been around lately. I don't know what he said or what he's doing, and I don't want to trash him without having him on the show and give his point of view. So Brian Koepke, if you're listening, please give a call, and anyone else, please give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 423-5361. That's 423-5361 here in Santa Cruz. So I kind of strayed a bit there. Our main topic at the last show was the Beach Flats and the destruction of low-income housing there, the violation of process by the city council majority, intent on ramrodding through its own Seaside Company giveaway plan, which I guess there are only two more days till the environmental impact report, any input to that report closes down. You better, if all you folks out there who have been following this issue, do get your letters in there. It's important, and perhaps I encourage anyone who has been following the Beach Flats to give me a call. The show is going to be kind of light on Beach Flats material today. We don't have any scheduled guests on Beach Flats. So if you want to call in and raise the issue on the phone, remind people of the addresses to write to for getting input into the environmental impact report, because while the city council can ignore you by law, apparently the environmental impact report folks have to respond to concerns about the Beach Flats, with what you know, creating huge new parking lots, high roller coasters, destroying housing, would do to the physical environment of the Beach Flats and how it would affect it, and the kinds of concerns that people would have about that, which we've gone into at some length in the last couple of shows around that issue. We had Catherine Gunderson last time talking about it. Before that, we had Roxanne Akistapache. We've had Phil Baer on the air. We've had reports from Keith Sugar, who didn't actually do the debate last time as we'd hoped. His grandfather was in a crisis in the hospital, and of course, Scott Kennedy suddenly slipped out the back door to go back, you know, beat the drums for the Homeless Community Resource Center. So that didn't happen. But we have had some excerpts and some very good ones about the Beach Flats issue, and I invite folks to call in on that issue. Also, lots of things are happening elsewhere around the, even around the Bay Area. For those of you who've been looking at the headlines of the Monterey Peninsula Herald, 4 days running, and maybe five, I haven't checked today's paper, the Monterey County Herald has had above-the-fold stories about this killing by police of an elderly man on a rooftop with a diagnosis of schizophrenic, who apparently challenged the police with, get this, no, it wasn't a toy gun, no, it wasn't a baseball bat this time, it was a corkscrew. And there's really a lot of anger from the relatives of this man. And I guess they've actually gotten the a psychiatric agency to investigate, an advocacy group for people with mentally diagnosed so-called mental illness conditions, to talk
to actually talk to the police officers to open an investigation of the matter, which I think might be one approach that some of us concerned with the Happy John Dine case hadn't thought of, that we might actually get somewhere with. Along the lines of the Happy John case, I have some information on that, and I'm still looking for the tape, which we made earlier 2 or 3 days ago in the office of Citizens Police Review Board staff person Gary Yamane. I haven't been too happy with Gary for the last month and a half. Those of you who have been following the show regularly know the Citizens Police Review Board, of course, that's the body handpicked by the City Council, which has refused to hold any independent investigations or public hearings into anything throughout the life of its existence, even when fatal shootings have happened. And their findings usually jibe with the police department. Their process has happened behind closed doors. They've driven all the most vigilant citizen members off the board, namely John Malkin and Gia Grant and others. So they're something between a bad joke and a sort of a sad joke. I don't know what it is. Anyway, they have... We went into their office after receiving word that the Happy John Dine radio dispatch tape that we had received was going to be open for comparison with the actual tape that the police review board heard. Because our tape, which has the specifics, it's a tape supposedly of radio dispatch around the John Dine shooting on November 13th. That's when Happy John was shot by Officer Connor Carey at the corner of Soquel and Front Street in the early evening for allegedly either reaching for, pointing, brandishing, maybe thinking of a toy gun. I'm making a joke about thinking of course. The original story from the police chief was he was pointing it. The story from the police review board was he was reaching for it. The story from the witnesses was he had nothing in his hand. He wasn't reaching for anything as far as virtually every witness said. But hey, the police officers were closest, and so, according to the Police Review Board's January report, that's why they were believed, even though their stories were also wildly contradictory. Anyway, the police review tape on that, there was a police dispatch tape where you can hear radio transmissions between the officers concerned and headquarters. We were sent a copy of that tape, supposedly, but everything before the shooting was completely blank. We wrote a letter to the police chief saying, what's going on here? Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure did, the organization investigating that situation. Police Chief Steve Belcher responded by saying, well, we don't know what you're talking about. We sent you the full uncensored tape, and we'll be happy to prove it by having it reviewed by Gary Yamane. And so we thought that, you know, he would be playing the full tape for us to compare. We went down there on Thursday morning, and he told us, oh, no, that's a secret tape. I can't play that. I haven't even got that tape. That's part of the personnel file of the police department. We can't play that, for heavens. No. So, but he did listen to our tape, and after listening for 15 seconds, he said, that's not the same tape I listened to. They've sent you a tape that has been erased or in some way changed. And he agreed that he would tell that to Police Chief Steve Belcher and request an official response. In other words, the tape being given out to the public was a censored tape or a doctored tape. You can actually hear the clicks where obviously some kind of erasing has happened, and you don't get to hear any conversations whatsoever between the two officers who are responsible for the death of Happy John Dine, specifically Officer Connor Carey, who shot him, and Officer Martin Over, who should have informed Officer Carey that Happy John Dine was no threat, but did not, or if he did, Officer Carey didn't answer, didn't respond to that, and we didn't know about it because the Police Review Board didn't investigate it. But this is all sort of old news. Very old news. On the other hand, since it hasn't been really publicized in broader quarters, perhaps it's news that we need to continue to consider, and hopefully we'll eventually get some kind of consideration. So we hope that there will be at least an official response from Police Chief Belcher about releasing the real tape, not the erased tape. That may be coming down the pike. And there's a very interesting story by John Malkin, who I mentioned earlier. He's a community activist around police matters. He was part of the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board, and then one of the first board members who finally resigned, and he explains why he resigned in this story in City on a Hill Press, which is in this week's City on a Hill Press. It came out on Thursday evening, and it's available different places around the east side. You can pick it up at I think the Bagelery and the laundromats, and on the west side, or downtown. You can get it at Logos Bookstore. So I recommend you look at City on a Hill Press and John Malkin's long description of his troubles with the police department and the Citizens Police Review Board, how they systematically tried to censor him, didn't support him, violated their own policies, and generally made a mockery of what was supposedly being created, an independent oversight body for the police department. Again, City on a Hill Press, John Malkin. It's in the Writings on the Wall section. So, a lot of interesting stuff in the last four issues of the Monterey County Herald. We also have an upcoming city council meeting, as I mentioned when the show began. That's happening on Tuesday, as it usually does, the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. The evening session is at 7, the afternoon session is at 3:30. And usually what I do when these council meetings happen is I turn to David Silva. Those of you who are regular listeners already know, Silva is a man who really knows lots about city council. He knows lots about how to smell the scent of money getting flushed down the drain that I often don't notice. I mean, I kind of look for specific homeless issues and civil rights issues, but certainly other issues impact that, because if all the money is going to some out-of-town developer, there's nothing left for the police review board, or a real police review board if they ever made one. There's nothing left for real homeless services. I don't just mean this phony community house project that is really the cause of the current consternation around the Karen Gillette brouhaha, which I'm going to be talking about later in the show, and writing about as well. But city council, of course, is supposed to be our first line of democratic process, where we actually can have some real input into what goes on in our city, how our money is spent, how